And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman on this Wednesday afternoon. Snoring is the symphony that results when one breathes through both the nose and mouth when asleep. It makes the soft tissue in the throat vibrate. Sometimes it sounds like a freight train. Joining us now is Dr. Howell Goldberg. He has a dental practice in Plantation and is an expert in both snoring and obstructive sleep apnea.
And welcome to you.
Thank you.
So I think I'd like to start with what I think is a statement of fact that you'll tell me, doctor, and then ask my first question, okay? Is it correct to say that not all people who snore have sleep apnea, but all people who have obstructive sleep apnea do snore, and that there are grave health and social risks associated with both?
Well, that's mostly correct, Bonnie, but there are rare instances where somebody can eliminate the snoring and still have sleep apnea.
Oh.
Obstructive sleep apnea.
Okay. Well, let's begin with just snoring.
Okay.
Loud snoring in this case. Joe just said what happens when we snore. What causes it and what are the dangers?
Okay. So snoring, let's define snoring. Snoring is not a medical problem. Snoring is just, it's also referred to as upper airway resistance. And basically all it is the soft tissue in the back of the mouth vibrating. So when the airway is narrowed in the back of the mouth, the increased pressures from the air going in and out vibrate the soft tissue.
So it's like a saxophone reed.
Exactly. It's exactly a musical instrument.
So it can be benign and just normal.
Well, snoring is not a medical problem. Snoring doesn't really affect the person that has it, but it affects everybody around them.
Okay, but there can be health issues associated with snoring, right?
Absolutely. Let me give you a statistic on that. Loud snorers are 40% greater odds of having high blood pressure, have 34% increased chances of a heart attack, and 67% of having a stroke.
Why would snoring create high blood pressure?
Well, what happens is the body gets fooled because the oxygen, snoring doesn't really affect the oxygen levels, but actually people don't really get a lot of medical problems from snoring as much as they do from obstructive sleep apnea.
Okay. So, well, should we move on to obstructive sleep apnea?
Yes.
Okay. What is it and how does it differ from snoring and how do you diagnose it?
Okay. So obstructive sleep apnea is actually the narrowing of the airways. And there's two types. There's just an apnea and then there's an obstructive apnea. But let's talk about obstructive because what happens is that the actual tissues close down and actually prevent the person from breathing in their sleep, even though they are trying to breathe. So what happens there is you have medical problems. You actually have a decrease in oxygen levels, and it doesn't allow you to get into a restful, restorative phase of sleep.
You mean REM sleep?
Well, we have different types of sleep.
Okay.
REM sleep is dreaming, but we do have slow wave restorative sleep. And actually, when you have an obstructive event, it doesn't allow you to get into the restorative slow wave sleep. And as a result, it usually ends up having something called arousals, which is the reason why when you wake up, you're tired because you haven't had any restorative sleep.
Okay, and what causes it?
Well, what causes it is the decrease in the oxygen levels.
Is weight a factor, or what are the causes of sleep apnea?
Okay, well, the causes of sleep apnea have to do with medical problems. I mean, people that actually take medications can be affected. People that are overweight can be affected, although you don't have to be overweight to have this problem. But we do know that as when somebody can breathe properly, they do not have any medical problems.
I've taken a few elbows and been told to turn over. Why is it that on the back you snore and on your side you tend not to?
Well, when you have this problem, there often is a positional component. When you are sleeping on your back and you go into a restful sleep, all your muscles relax, and when you breathe in, your lower jaw drops back and allows your tongue to act like a cork in the back of your mouth. And that's why dental appliances work so well, because it helps to stabilize the jaw and keep the jaw forward to prevent the airway from clogging up.
What about those nose strips? Do they help at all?
In order to get a successful result, even when using oral appliances, you do have an advantage if you have nasal breathing to help share the air going in and out of your mouth. I think that if we described the airway in a concept of being an air tube, you can see that starting from the nose, you have different, going from the nose to below your tongue, you have an airway. And along the way, you have potential areas of obstruction, be it the nose itself. It could be a deviated septum. It could be polyps or turbinates. And then when you travel down, you have the possibility of a long palate, a large tongue, and then we have fat pads along the sides of the throat. So when somebody's heavier, they have a lot more narrowing of the airway due to the excess weight along the sidewalls, we call them. And also, you have your tonsils and your adenoids. And all of these things add up to the perfect storm in certain people. And obviously, the more obstruction you have, the worse your condition is going to be.
And how long can one actually not breathe with sleep apnea?
Well, you know, the definition of what an apnea is, it's a reduction of about 4% of your oxygen levels for at least 10 seconds. But I was reading a report yesterday, and I noticed that the person actually had an obstructive event in excess of 2 minutes.
So it can go
from 10 seconds, it could go up to minutes.
So is during that time oxygen not going to the brain?
That's exactly right. It's not going to the brain. It's not going to your lungs. It's not going to your other organs. And what happens is while you're sleeping, you don't know what's going on except for the fact that your body gets scared. It needs some oxygen. So what happens is you have this arousal, and your body automatically wakes you up and encourages you to breathe. You have an explosive event, and then you start breathing again.
I don't expect you to have an answer for this, but preparing for this, I was thinking that from an evolutionary standpoint, you'd think that snoring would have been eliminated because in the hunter-gatherer era, those who snored would probably be easy prey.
Well, I don't have an answer for that, but that makes a lot of sense. If you're too tired to get up and you don't know anybody's around you, you're meat.
Yeah, that is an interesting point, though. I wonder why we still do it. I guess for the reasons the doctor's saying. So there are many different kinds of therapies, if we want to talk about them. You mentioned oral appliance therapy.
Yes.
What is that?
Okay, so oral appliance therapy is basically a device similar to a mouth guard that usually you wear on your upper and your lower teeth, and they come in many, many variations. Today, there's over 50 accepted designs.
And they're custom fitted, of course.
Not really. If you watch a lot of TV, we have over-the-counter Nike mouth guards and oral devices that I personally don't think work as well, but a certain percentage of anything is going to work. So they come in all different sizes and shapes. But the custom ones are the ones that really, if you have a problem, you really want to try to get constructed.
Why don't we play the
the sound the of cut. Sleep apnea?
This is okay. what it sounds like. It's kind of, well...
It's well, what you'll notice, you'll hear in the background is a clock ticking to show the periods of time that the person actually isn't breathing.
I'm about to hyperventilate.
I know. It sounds like they're choking. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah. It that was actually a mild case of an obstructive
event. It sounded like a lion roaring.
Well, in actuality, when they actually get the arousals and they start breathing, it's more like of an explosive, like when you're stuck underwater and you can't wait for the surface and you have to pop your head out and take a deep breath.
So how does one know? Well, two questions. One is, if you live alone, how do you know if you snore or have sleep apnea? Is there a test? You have that Epworth test or?
Yeah, well, the Epworth test is a subjective test that tells you how tired you are.
Okay.
You can take that to figure out if you have the problem. But the most important thing that you're going to experience is what we call excessive daytime sleepiness. So that is really the big difference between having a medical problem and not having a medical problem. If you're a tired individual, you most probably have that problem.
Okay, so you should check it out. I mean, if you know you snore, but you don't know if you have sleep apnea, mm-hmm. obstructive sleep apnea, who would you go to get diagnosed?
Okay, well, the only person that can diagnose this condition is a physician. Dentists are not allowed to diagnose this position, this situation, because we work with the physicians to get a team approach to treating the result. So you need to go to either your primary doctor or you need to go to a pulmonary doctor. And get diagnosed and go for something called a sleep study, which will quantify how bad your situation is.
And what happens if one is untreated or misdiagnosed?
Well, there's a lot of physical ramifications of not getting treatment, and most of them have to do with cardiovascular situations. You have an increased chance of having a stroke, a heart attack. You have chronic high blood pressure. There's a lot of situations that you will have. In fact, one of the other things that if you don't get it treated, it's something that when the oxygen levels deviate and they go down, you're creating a situation called oxidative stress. And the really interesting part about oxidative stress is that it actually creates inflammation of the vessels in your body into the heart, and it could be a big part of having your obstructed heart vessels from having plaque build up on it.
We're speaking about snoring and sleep apnea, obstructive sleep apnea, with Dr. Howell Goldberg. He's a dentist and a founding member of the Dental Organization for Sleep Apnea. We're going to take a short break on today's Topical Currents. When we get back, we're going to give out the number, take some calls, and stay with us.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Dr. Howell Goldberg. Our topic is snoring and sleep apnea. If you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, you're certainly welcome. That number, 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-WLRN. And email is radio@WLRN.org. Doctor, why do men snore more than women?
Well, that's a good question. Probably because they are out drinking late at night. But, men usually have thicker necks. And
there's more capacity there, I guess.
Yeah. If you really look at some of our athletes, I mean, look at all the NFL players that have these bull necks that just have so much tissue and mass that are so collapsible, and they end up having higher percentage of sleep apnea and snoring.
We were talking during the break about what percentage of people go undiagnosed. What percentage is that?
Well, this is the really scary thing. When you really look at the statistics, it's estimated that 50 to 70 million people have sleep-disordered breathing, of which sleep apnea is part of that. They estimate that...
You're talking about Americans?
I'm talking about Americans.
Okay.
And of that amount of people, 18 million of them actually have sleep apnea. So the scary part is that it's 80 to 90% diagnosed, and that's with lots of awareness that's developing today.
And why has the awareness been so raised, heightened? Why is it in the public spotlight more?
Well, I think that we're getting a lot more legitimacy to the field. When I started doing this, it was a fringe treatment that wasn't even recognized by the medical community. So with all the research and the development and all the clinical confirmation of the results, it's really coming into its heyday. Day, and that was helped along in 2006 by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine when they actually recognized this treatment as a primary treatment for mild to moderate situations.
You're talking about the oral appliance.
The oral devices for treating obstructive sleep apnea.
I know there are others, and I'd like to talk about them. Mm-hmm. Are most of these treatments covered by insurance?
Well, if you have it properly diagnosed by a physician and you have the good data that shows that you have the problem, it is covered, especially if you meet the criteria of mild to moderate. And maybe let me tell you what the ideal person would be for having an oral appliance. That would be a skinny female who likes to sleep on her back, and that would be a good result.
Okay. For what about not a skinny female that doesn't like to sleep on her back? Who else is a candidate for this?
Well, everybody has the potential of being a candidate. Unfortunately, we get fooled. We can't always diagnose whether you're going to be successful or not, but everybody is a candidate. And even if somebody has a severe situation and they can't wear the CPAP, which stands for continuous positive airway pressure, and then doing nothing, we actually try and make them a device, and very often we're very successful with that. So anybody could be a candidate, but you need to have probably good oral health, a good set of teeth.
Okay.
If you prefer to sleep on your back, mm-hmm. you can start on your side, but you're going to wind up on your back.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading in the material that you can take a T-shirt and have a tennis ball sewn in it that'll be on the back. So if you try and go on your back, then you've got that impediment there.
Yes, yes. A positional component is very effective. They actually make parachute-type devices that you can strap on. You have the tennis balls. You can have the full-body pillows that you can wrap yourself around. But in actuality, somebody who likes to sleep on their back can be even more successful with an oral appliance.
Now, how does that work exactly?
So the way that it works is, to be simplistic, your tongue is attached to your chin. And when you advance your tongue and you advance your chin forward, you're creating a tension in the tongue. And what's happening is, just like a rubber band, it's actually keeping the base of the tongue from falling back to the back of the mouth and preventing it from leaning on the soft palate or any of the other soft tissue that,
okay.
that they have.
Going back to the insurance for a moment, mm-hmm. I was thinking, what about someone with a problem who has no insurance and can't afford the treatments? Is there help available? Any kind of public assistance for this?
As of now, we really don't have any public assistance for this.
And what would a treatment like the oral appliance cost, roughly?
Well, it's hard to say because it has such regional differences. And also, it's a medical situation, so the prices are regulated by the government in the form of Medicare, which actually recognizes this as a problem. So it can be conservatively anywhere from $2,000 to $7,000, depending on where you live in the country.
Oh, wow. So it goes,
It's not inexpensive. Not for a custom device.
So why don't we talk about that CPAP machine? It seems rather cumbersome.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the most commonly used treatment? And what is the downside of using it?
Okay. So CPAP is and probably always will be the gold standard because if you can wear the machine and it's adjusted properly, the air that's delivered to the patient will have enough pressure to open up the airway and allow that person to get the proper oxygenation.
Okay.
So the problem with CPAP is that not many people like it. And if you're lucky enough to be able to wear it, you really are lucky because up to half of the people that have them do not use them.
We have an emailer, Juan, says he wanted to share this bit of information. His wife would wake him because of loud snoring. Eventually, a doctor in Miami diagnosed him with sleep apnea. After a sleep study, his solution was to fit me with a CPAP mask, but I never came back to see him since the prospect of wearing a mask to sleep wasn't something I was looking forward to. Although he never recommended that I lose weight, I lost 60 pounds because I rode so much bike after that. One day I asked my wife if I was snoring. She said no. Apparently, I lost the condition due to the weight loss. So, weight loss
This person is to be commended. He actually took his own health issues and he dealt with them in his own way, and he got a good success. And yes, weight loss is definitely one of the recommended treatments for trying to reduce your snoring or your sleep apnea.
Let's take a call or two before we break. This is Suzanne in Miami. Hi there, Suzanne.
Hello,
you're up.
Thank you for taking my call. My husband recently had a general physical exam, and on the EKG, the doctor found an indicator for sleep apnea. And we haven't been, he suggested that my husband participate in a sleep study, but my husband is afraid that he'll have to have the CPAC, and so he hasn't followed up on that. I'm just wondering if you had any information that you could share. The fact that it shows on an EKG, is that an indicator that this, his condition is more serious than I would think?
Doctor?
Well, that's really a very good point. The only thing that really shows up on EKGs is something called arrhythmias, and that is a very common symptom of having obstructive sleep
apnea.
That's
the heart.
That's when the heart starts beating erratically. So that's the only thing I think that can show up on that. But I think you should encourage your husband to still go for the sleep study and maybe try out the CPAP machine, because unless you try it, you really can't evaluate the experience. And if he doesn't like it or it's not for him, there are alternatives. But he's in the game if he goes ahead and proceeds with
it
that.
It sounds like that would be kind of claustrophobic or something, but have a mask over your face.
Well, there are different...
I guess you'd get used to it.
This is an area where the medical community and the medical equipment companies are really putting a lot of effort, because there are three types of interfaces. Actually, there's four types now. One is a full-face mask that covers the nose and the mouth. The other is something that just covers the nose. And then they have something called nasal pillows, which are basically two little inserts that actually push into your nostrils. But they all those things still have straps, and they all have a little bit of restrictions, and some people are claustrophobic. Now, in the dental community, we are trying to address that problem, and we have oral appliances that are actually hybrid, which we can use in conjunction with a CPAP machine and an oral device. And in fact, we actually have something that is the nasal pillows, where you don't have to have the straps. You can anchor it on your teeth, and it can lean against your nose, and you don't have all the restrictions of the headgear and all the limitations of your head.
It almost sounds like you'd be a masochist. Enjoy it. Let's take another quick call. This is Pete in Miami. Peter.
Hey, hello. Listen, I figured I could add something to this discussion, because I've had the experience myself of pretty severe snoring that I was actually completely unaware of until I got married recently, and then I was very much made aware of it when my wife found it impossible to sleep in my presence. At times, I was even relegated to the back porch because the snoring was so intense. And it amazed me because I had no idea. You know, there were times I would wake up during the night, but I didn't really associate that with snoring. So I went through quite a litany of doctor visits. I did have a sleep study that was performed where I was wired up pretty extensively and spent the night in what looked like a hotel room. And data was taken. It was determined I did not have sleep apnea, obstructive apnea, but I certainly was snoring. I saw an ad on TV and purchased one of the $39 devices that they have available there, which is one of those moldable plastic devices, I guess, that you soak in hot water and they mold to your bite. But it was a very, very large apparatus that really filled my mouth up. And I also found that even though I could make three attempts to reseat my bite in the device, it never really fit properly, and it was very uncomfortable. What it does is it forces your lower jaw forward in relation to your upper teeth, and this opens up the airway a bit. I then found my way to a provider of the appliances that you've been talking about, a much, much more compact device, one that has a very interesting construction that's hard on the outside but has a somewhat softer, rubbery inside. It has an ingenious construction, that there's a hook that hooks into a rod that extends across the lower portion of this. That hook can be adjusted with an Allen screw, and it again pushes your jaw forward. Well, my results were pretty stunning from the first night I used the device. My snoring all but disappeared, and it's been about a year that I've had it now, and it remains so. I've tightened it a little bit over the years, over this period of time, but it's really continuing to work really well. My question is, are there different configurations of these devices for, people with certain bite conditions or other conditions that would require a different kind of appliance?
Okay, doctor.
Well, that is really a terrific question, Peter, because the answer is most definitely. There are so many different devices that it's important to go to somebody who's knowledgeable about them, because the dental condition that each person has can dictate which device that you need to select. So your device is something that actually the mechanism is adjustable by you, that you probably can, and it's located in the front of your mouth. But many devices have adjustments or mechanisms on both sides of the mouth, and these are a little bit less patient-friendly as far as the adjustments go. But there are devices that put pressures on different teeth and different areas of the mouth, and if you know, you have a lot of dental work in your mouth, or you have a cosmetic case in your mouth, one device wouldn't be as suitable for you as somebody who has a full dentition of teeth, perfect teeth, or somebody even who has a mouth that don't have a lot of teeth in it. So, going to the right person who uses many different devices is the way to go on that.
Mm-hmm. One more quick question, if I may. How long can one expect one of these appliances to last?
So that's also a good question, because they are expensive and people think about those things. Hopefully, the person who makes it for you will instruct you on how to take care of it properly. But some people, I've seen the devices after 5 years look as nice and new as the day that I gave it to them. And then I have other people, for whatever reasons, let's give them the benefit of the doubt that they have fairly good oral hygiene. And maybe they have some issues with their body chemistry where their saliva may be acidic and the devices don't last more than 6 to 9 months.
Does clenching have anything to do with it?
Well, you know, you would think that clenching would be a red flag for wearing these things, but actually the device that Peter is wearing is something that actually helps some of my patients. I'll select that if they have a clenching or bruxing problem or even migraine headaches.
Oh.
That happens to be the case, by the way, that I do have a clenching and bruxism grinding problem, and the device takes care of that at the same time.
That's great.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for calling, Peter.
It's Topical Currents. We're speaking with Dr. Howell Goldberg. He's an adjunct professor at NSU and a diplomat on the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine. And we're going to take that break, and we'll be right back.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dr. Howell Goldberg. Our topic, sleep apnea and snoring. Back to the phones, Sandy Hollywood. Hi. Sandy.
Hi. Yes. I have sleep apnea, and I have a CPAP machine, and it drives the back of my throat so much I have to turn it off.
Okay.
I weigh 130 pounds. I'm 5'5".
Okay. Well, one thing that, does it have a humidifier in it? They do have a little device that can actually humidify the air.
Yeah. I've got that up on 5.
Okay. So, can you breathe easily through your nose?
Pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
in fact, use those nose buds.
Oh, you use the nose strips to help open up your nose? I would say that maybe...
I use for the CPAP machine.
Right. So you're using the full face mask or just the nasal mask?
I'm using the nose buds in the CPAP machine.
Oh, okay. So you're using the nasal pillows.
Oh, that's what you call it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So with the nasal pillows, it probably has something to do with the pressure that you're receiving, and that you're just doing a lot of mouth breathing. The only if you have the humidifier, the only thing you need to do is have like a sports bottle with a straw and some water at the side of your bed and just sip it during the night.
Or a clothespin on your lips.
Oh,
I was thinking maybe one of your apparatuses could be better than the CPAP machine.
Well,
they say I stop breathing every 14 seconds.
Every 14 seconds, so you sound like you have a severe situation. You're on the right track. If you can work out the CPAP, that's the way to go. But if you're not going to wear it, then you should investigate the alternatives.
Do you want to give some contact information, Dr. Goldberg? Your website and your number?
Yes. If you want to learn more about it, you can go to my website, which is fountainsdental.com. You can click on the little box that says snoring and sleep apnea, and you can go and check out Snoring Isn't Sexy. And that gives you a lot of information, and if you need to make an appointment or a consultation, you'll find that over there.
Okay, Sandy? Okay. We have an emailer, Corey. My wife is diagnosed narcoleptic, but before that diagnosis, she was given a sleep test and discovered she had sleep apnea. They did surgery on her nose to reduce the apnea, which was successful before performing a second test for the narcolepsy. Can you speak about the relationship between the two conditions, if there is one, or if there's any research links between the two?
Well, the only thing I can say about that, as far as I know, there really isn't a relationship between narcolepsy and opening up the airway, because narcolepsy could be more of a neurologic problem than it is with a functional airway problem. But there are medications and there are doctors that specialize in that. You know, they're usually pulmonary or sleep doctors. That I would look for a certified or a board-certified sleep physician that treats sleep disorders.
I've known people who could be sitting on the sofa and snore.
Absolutely. Well, that's if you go, and even if you go to the website, Snoring Isn't Sexy, and you click on the Epworth test and you take the test, it'll tell you how to quantify. And that's one of the things that's on the list of things. Can you read a book and fall asleep? Can you watch TV and fall asleep? There's a whole bunch of questions, and it'll help you quantify how tired you really are.
The emailer had mentioned surgery. I wanted to ask you about surgical treatment options and the risks inherent in surgery.
Well, surgical treatment options always have risks. But if you're lucky enough to be one of those individuals that has a surgical solution, that's really, in the whole scheme of what we're talking about, is the only cure for this problem.
Okay.
And they actually have a surgical procedure, which is very radical. And it's used for people that have small chins and small jaws, where they actually break your upper jaw and your lower jaw.
Oh my God.
And they advance your face forward. And the success rate on that approaches 98%. And the benefit on the side is you end up looking a lot better than you did when you started.
Or at least different.
different and hopefully better.
But that sounds pretty radical.
It's radical, and it really should be used for those people that have life-threatening situations.
Okay.
Let's take Matt. Matt's in Hollywood. Hi.
Just a quick comment on Joe's question about the evolution of the disease. A few years back, a couple of people wrote a book called Survival of the Sickest, and they kind of postulated that a lot of diseases like diabetes, heart disease, things that we suffer from later in life, happen long after we historically were breeding. So, you know, the sleep apnea, I don't think it happens to many 16 to 18-year-olds. So that's probably why we carried it through evolution with us.
Okay, thanks for that info.
Another emailer, which is something I asked already, if they don't have insurance, can they get good treatment? And you said there's really no other option. But I was wondering about natural remedies. What are some natural remedies that people with sleep apnea could do if they can't get treatment, if they can't afford it?
Well, I can't, off the top of my head, I really can't think of any natural remedies, you know, other than, you know, losing weight. You know, do they have, if you go on the internet, they have sprays that stop snoring.
What about those?
That's a temporary fix. It's basically just lubricating the soft tissue so that maybe it doesn't catch the other tissues.
But eventually that's going to dry out.
Yeah, eventually it's going to wear off and you're going to still have the problem. But, you know, I can't really think of any natural remedies like some sort of a supplement or anything like that
herbs.
That you can take.
What about?
Well, people that have insomnia that can take melatonin. Melatonin, which is a supplement to help them sleep better. But that's a different issue.
Right. And what about, I noticed, I read on your website, if you change your eating habits and you don't eat a big meal within a few hours before you go to sleep? Is that something else?
Well, that's something that really, because one of the symptoms of having obstructed sleep apnea is something called GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, which is manifested by heartburn, and it actually does some damage to your teeth also. And basically what happens is, have you ever tried to drink a milkshake through a straw, and you're sucking away on the straw, and the straw collapses down? Well, that's basically what's happening. If you go to sleep with a full stomach, and you're having some airway problems and resistance, it's causing a negative pressure, and it's pulling all the contents, including acids from your stomach, into your mouth, and that's why you shouldn't do it.
Okay, so there is something else that could help.
Yes.
Okay.
It's time for a break.
Okay, it's time for a break. We're speaking with Dr. Howell Goldberg, and he is a member of the Dental Organization for Sleep Apnea, an adjunct professor at NSU. We're talking about sleep apnea and snoring on today's Topical Currents. We'll take a short break, come back, and take some more calls.
It is Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Dr. Howell Goldberg. Sleep apnea and snoring, our topic this afternoon. Back to the phones, Mickey in Boynton Beach. Thanks for your patience. Hi.
Hi. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
All right. I'm hoping that you can answer something for me that my doctor cannot answer or has not been able to answer. He calls me a freak of nature. I am 56 years old. I am a personal trainer. I have about 3.5% body fat. I'm in extremely good shape. I have snored my entire life. I do have sleep apnea. However, I wake up totally rested. I never get tired during the day. And he can't explain why or how. And I'm hoping maybe you have an explanation.
Well, that certainly is an interesting question. Because according to all the parameters that you presented, you really shouldn't have that problem. But I don't have enough information to give you a good answer, but I will tell you that we live in a caffeinated society, so I don't know whether you're a Red Bull type guy or a Starbucks.
I do not take any supplements. I prescribe to the paleo diet, so I don't eat any dairy. I do not eat cheeses. I do not eat any of those things that would cause me to have any inflammation or clogging of my nose or breathing.
Okay, so, we do treat a lot of very skinny people that are not overweight, that don't really have a lot of the indicators that you would think somebody with sleep apnea or snoring has. Without looking at the structures of your mouth, have you had your dentist evaluate the relationship of your tongue to your soft palate?
But the relationship of my tongue.
Your soft palate, the size of your tonsils, the size of your jaw, the relationship of your upper jaw and your lower jaw. Without knowing that, I really can't give you an answer, but...
Thing my dentist has told me is that I have a very large tongue, if that has...
Well, that guess what? That's probably it. And you probably would be a very good responder to some sort of an oral device. It sounds like you would be.
Okay, but the fact that I wake up, that I am never tired, and I wake up totally rested, is that, that's where my doctor couldn't understand it, because they did hook me up to a sleep monitor and everything else.
Yeah.
And he's just is at odds as to know why I'm never tired and why I do not have high blood pressure, and I don't have any of the indicators that I should have for my sleeping.
Well, unless you tell me that your study showed that you had severe changes in your oxygen levels, you actually are just a primary snorer. You're somebody that doesn't have the medical condition associated with an obstructed airway.
Hmm. Even though I do stop breathing from time to time.
Well, if you stop breathing and your oxygen levels go up and down, then yes, you're an enigma.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Hoping you had a different answer, but that's the basic same thing he said.
Sorry.
Thank you.
And we move to Francisco in Miami. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I wanted to thank everyone for taking the call. Actually, for the previous caller and a comment that was made earlier about maybe some of the ages affected by sleep apnea, I was diagnosed with sleep apnea 3 years ago at 27 years of age, and I'm 5'10", weighing around 180 pounds, pretty fit by my own opinion. And after the sleep study, it seems like I was having 252 apneas within the course of the evening. And I'll tell you that after receiving my CPAP machine, it's been a life-changing thing for me. It's been such a positive impact on my life that I've made a lifestyle choice where I take it everywhere when I travel. And I really just wanted to encourage people maybe in the younger segment of the listening audience to maybe go out there, get it checked, you know, submit themselves to a sleep study because my results have been great. And for the caller that actually just got off, Men's Health Magazine had a publication they put out, I think, in November of 2010 called The Fit Man's Last Gasp. So for so many of us that maybe don't show any of these precursors of sleep apnea, how a lot of us younger people are, you know, suffering from apneas ourselves.
That's really terrific, and I'm glad that you're one of the successful responders to wearing your CPAP machine. If you're wearing it, it's working for you, don't change anything.
Yeah, I want to follow up with a question, I guess, because I'm so young in age and I've been using it for the last 3 years. Is there any detrimental effect or something I should be careful of in the years to come as I wear it, you know, for maybe things that might happen down the line?
No, people that wear it successfully don't really have any side effects, and the only thing that you can look forward to is the increase of developments in technology that will make it even easier for you to wear.
Excellent.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Okay, we have an emailer, Chris, not as good an experience. She's been on a CPAP machine for 2 months. The problem is that the machine wakes her up with the sensation of having the air being pumped down her throat with such force that I seem to be fighting to breathe out. Plus, I wake up bloated and a lot of air. Is my pressure 14 too high? And what can I do about all the swallowed air?
Well, that's a very good question. And I really think that what this person needs to do is to get herself recalibrated for her machine, because 14 is a really high pressure. But the important thing that she mentioned was the fact that she has issues with the pressures, like breathing against it or maybe it going into
just thinking about your breathing affects your breathing, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, she may be on a CPAP, and they do have other machines. One of them is called a BiPAP, which actually adjusts the different pressures as you breathe in and out. And it sounds like she may be a candidate for that, or even an AutoPAP, which adjusts automatically. It has a little chip in it, and it's always evaluating the pressures of your breathing.
What kind of noise do these CPAP machines make?
Well, the CPAP machines have gotten so much better. They used to make lots of noise, and today you can barely hear them. They just have a small white noise hum to them.
So that could help sleeping.
I think so.
We have another emailer. What's your special training, and what should a patient look for in a dentist specializing in snoring correction?
Well, that's very good. Well, my special training is that, you know, I've been doing this for over 20 years, and I do have a diplomat status with the American Association of Dental Sleep Medicine. I had to present cases. I had to have them evaluated, and then I had to take an exam. So my qualifications are that I have a lot of insight into all the subtleties that can make a case successful or not.
Okay.
And back to the phones. This is Mark in Weston. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. I'm one of the positive people. Positive. I was diagnosed with mild to moderate, and just wanted to point out, when you go for a sleep test, it's not really a test. It's like a night at the Holiday Inn, a room at the hospital, your own private room. It looks very much like a Holiday Inn with a lot of technology in it, and sure enough, there's a nurse who's paid to watch over you, so it's almost a luxurious thing.
But just that you know your sleep is being monitored, doesn't that keep you awake?
Oh, no, no, no.
I think it would be.
No, you're there to get help, and obviously that's the idea.
And you're so tired from not sleeping that, of course, you can sleep.
Correct. I was the guy who was falling asleep on my way home from work on, you know, 595 and so forth. So let me tell you, when I started using the CPAP machine, I did notice a difference. I do take it with me when I travel. I'm traveling right now. It's in my tiny little suitcase. And when I know I'm going to have a challenging day ahead of me, I definitely use it the night before. I use it probably 4 to 5 times a week, and my boss has it as well. He says, his wife says, it's the sexiest thing because she gets a full night's sleep.
That's funny.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for your
call. And we're getting short on time. David and Kendall, you're up. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Quickly.
Yeah. Dr. Goldberg, yes. I just recently took the sleep study. I've been given the CPAP machine. Quick question is, my pressure is 13, according to my doctor, but I wake up with dry mouth.
Doctor?
Well, Make sure that you have the humidifier on it, and make sure that you're breathing easily through your nose so that you can share the airway and that you're not concentrating it on your mouth. That'll dry it out when the air passes.
Okay, and one more time, your website and contact information, Doctor?
Yes, my website is fountainsdental.com.
Fountain, as in water fountains,
right,
with an S?
Fountains with an S. Dental.com. If you want to learn about sleep apnea, click on that box and go to Snoring Isn't Sexy.
Well, we certainly want to thank you, Dr. Howell Goldberg. We want to apologize to Marcia and to Mark and to Francesa. And it was really good to hear about. I see it here that raising a bed 4 inches can reduce snoring. So,
well, anything positional.
The head of the bed.
Yeah.
Well, we certainly
positional.
Want to thank you, Dr. Howell Goldberg. Best to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for listening this hour. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. We have free audio archives and downloads of this and past programs on our website, WLRN.org. Also, more information, discussion, and more at the Topical Currents website Facebook page. Tomorrow's program begins with a discussion of unique South Florida architecture, especially in Fort Lauderdale. Mod Weekend 2013 is on the horizon. Also, Linda Gassenheimer with renowned chef Alan Susser. The Miami Fine Chocolate and Food Show is this weekend. And the calendar. On this day, 1923, 90 years ago, the birth of announcer and ultimate sidekick, Ed McMahon, in Detroit. He was a former bingo caller and sidewalk pitchman, and flew 85 Marine combat missions in Korea. Ed died in 2009. And on this day in 1945, 68 years ago, the birth of actor, director, producer, and son of Carl, Rob Reiner, in the Bronx, New York. He co-wrote the first episode of Happy Days. The Meathead. One more on this day in 1981, 32 years ago, anchorman Walter Cronkite sides off the CBS Evening News for the final time. He first anchored in 1962. He, too, died in 2009. And we leave with Walter Cronkite's conclusion to that final anchor broadcast, quote, "Old anchor men, you see, don't fade away. They just keep coming back for more. And that's the way it is, Friday, March 6th, 1981. Dan Rather will be sitting in here for the next few years. Good night. Rather, of course, sat there for 24 years. This is Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.